The breeze shifted. A rooster weather vane swung around to face Matt Beitler. He approached the freshly painted red barn. The siding door stood open, spilling out the scent of hay and horse. His dog, Ajax, strained at the leash. "Stay," Matt said. The dog fell back, then sat on his haunches. His grayed muzzle pointed up toward Matt in a hopeful gesture. Matt looped the other end of the leash around a hitching post and glanced around the property. "Let's check inside." His partner, Blake Lehman, stepped around him. "Wait a minute. We haven't secured the scene." Matt grabbed at the deputy's arm, but Blake shook him off. "The geocacher who found the body said it was in the woods behind the barn." "But the perp could be hiding here." Blake moved through the barn door. Matt didn't object. Maybe it was better to have him out of the way. "I'm heading to the woods," he called. "Backup should be here any minute." He turned and surveyed the sparse grass between the outbuildings and the house. Laundry hung from a line strung from the house to the top of the barn. He noticed a pulley that allowed the occupants to run the clothes up the line and back. A buggy sat parked partway under a tree. "Amish," Blake said with a twist to his mouth. "Our schools are in trouble because of them. We've lost funding since they moved into the area." Matt stepped to the back porch and pounded on the door. "Sheriff's Department," he called. Only silence answered. Nothing stirred in the yard. Matt veered across the lawn, grabbed Ajax's leash, then headed toward the back. Dry grass crunched under his shoes, and the wind moaned through the treetops. He eased behind the barn, but the area was empty. No back door here. He darted across the empty pasture to the woods. Blake sounded like a herd of elephants following him. Matt turned and frowned. "Keep it down." "Maybe it's a prank call," Blake said. "I don't think so. Look at Ajax." He pointed to his dog. Tension showed in every line of the muscular German Shepherd's body. Ajax strained at the leash. "The caller said about 50 feet inside the woods, on the other side of a meadow." Matt couldn't hear anything above the wind and the crunch of dead leaves. Ajax dragged him on. A loud buzzing began to ring in his ears, and he knew what he'd find before he stepped past the meadow into the shade of a large oak tree. Flies rose in a cloud at their approach, then settled back onto the body. A man dressed in the typical Amish garb of dark pants, a white shirt, and a straw hat. The man was smooth-shaven, so he must not have been married. The heat had caused the body to begin the decay process, and the stink of death coated Matt's nose. "Looks like poison," Blake said. "Probably strychnine from the way he's contorted." Matt retreated. "Don't disturb him until forensics gets here. Call it in." Blake nodded and stepped back into the clearing. Matt tuned out his partner's yammering on the radio and glanced around the wooded area. A few fallen maple trees stretched across a dry stream. Newly sprouted leaves danced in the wind, and a brilliant cardinal fluttered over his head. Nothing else stirred. Considering the strong odor and the flies, the perp was long gone. He needed to talk to the guy who found the body. The man had been too freaked out to wait for their arrival. He had given his name, address, and phone number, though. That would be Matt's first stop when he was finished here. Blake's heavy footsteps tromped back through the brush. "They're on their way. Weird case. Wasn't there something similar some years back?" Matt nodded. "An Amish man and woman were poisoned. Their only kid, a daughter, found them. This setup looks the same, except their bodies were covered with a quilt." "Were there any leads?" "We found a neighbor dead from the same poison he'd supposedly used on the family, though it never made sense to me. I was never sure the guy we found dead was the killer. I think he might have been another victim. The case is still open, but we never found a motive or the quilt stolen from the family's home." "What happened to the daughter?" "She married the detective in charge of the investigation and left town." Matt's voice grew clipped. He should have tracked them down. He was still mad about Reese's rude departure and the gun he'd never returned. Blake jerked a thumb toward the body. "You think it's connected?" The thought had been hovering in Matt's head. "It's been 10 years. You'd think the killer would have kept on killing. If they were connected, maybe he'd be able to close two cases at once. Blake's cell phone rang and he pulled it out. Blake answered the phone. Hi, honey. Matt listened with half an ear. It was probably Matt's sister, Gina, Blake's wife. He stooped and studied the ground for clues. Speakers blared out the names of passengers with messages waiting for them. Her cell phone in her hand, Hannah sipped her latte in the LaGuardia Airport. The show had gone well, but she was exhausted and wanted nothing more than to sleep in her own bed tonight. Angie had gone to the restroom, and Hannah toyed with the idea of calling Luca. He'd be shocked to hear from her. Maybe he'd heard of her book. She hoped not, though, knowing that by writing it she broke every principle of Hochmut. The concept of self-promotion was alien to the Amish. Her cousin would be grieved to know she had even had a publicist and sought to promote herself and her book. He would tell her to let God be her publicist, or, better yet, to choose a career that didn't put her in the limelight. Luca and Hannah's father had built their greenhouse business by providing good service to the community. They'd never taken out an ad in their lives. Her hands shook as she called the number. She'd never forgotten it, though 10 years had passed since she'd spoken with anyone at that number. Settling the phone against her ear, she took another sip of her hot coffee to wet her dry throat. What would she say? The phone continued to ring until the answering machine in the greenhouse picked up, and Luca's familiar voice instructed her to leave a message. She hung up without doing it. This was a conversation they needed to have in person. She watched the people walking past, mothers with children clinging to their hands, fathers carrying babies. Her heart ached with emptiness. How ironic that all she'd been taught since childhood focused on the importance of family and community. And now, here she was, at 32, without anyone. No close friends other than Angie, who was an employee. Oh, she had acquaintances from the Quilting Society and at the museum, but no one she could pour out her heart to. No one who understood why she kept herself aloof. Sometimes she didn't understand herself. It should be easy to put down the wall and make herself vulnerable again. But it wasn't. Living with Reese had shown her how a mask could hide the real person. Trust was hard to find, maybe because she'd never been able to let go of the bitterness and anger she felt toward Reese, and toward Cyrus Long, who had ruined her life. If her parents had lived, she never would have been brazen enough to run off with Reese. Her life would be so different today. Some days, life had a way of mocking him. The first day of the investigation had turned up nothing, and all Matt wanted was to take pizza home to his daughter and watch VeggieTales after the sitter left. But when he pulled into the driveway, he saw Gina sitting on the porch swing with Caitlin. Every marriage had conflicts, and she needed to work out hers with Blake, not run to him with every little problem. He stifled a sigh and got out of his SUV. "Hey, girls," he said, smiling down at his daughter. She was the one bright spot in a world gone gray 3 years ago when Annalise died. "I brought pizza," Gina said. Her smile was tentative, as though she feared he would be upset. "I was craving it." He ruffled the top of his daughter's hair. "You got a hug for old Dad." When Gina was around, Caitlin had eyes for no one else. Poor kid missed her mother's touch. Nothing was said about why Gina had come until 2 hours later, after Caitlin had been bathed and put to bed. "Spill it," he said when he came back to the living room, where Gina sat with Ajax's head on her lap. "Spill what?" She rubbed Ajax's ears. He wore a blissful expression. "The long face. You haven't said a word about Blake. Where is he tonight?" "I have no idea." Her lips quivered and she didn't look at him. Matt flopped into the recliner. "Did you try calling him? He's probably working late. What time did you leave him?" "About 2 hours before I came home. I was going over the murder." He glanced at his watch. "Over 3 hours ago." Her lips quivered. I think he's having an affair, Matt." Matt balled up his fists. I don't believe it. Blake loves you. He got up and went to the sofa. He started to put his arm around her, then dropped it back into place. They didn't have a huggy-kissy sort of relationship, but she turned into his embrace and wailed against his chest. He patted her back, but he was bad at this kind of thing. Trust him a little, Gina. He'll be home soon. She lifted a tear-stained face. Well, he can come around and find an empty house. I'm leaving him. Can I stay with you for a while, Matt? He dropped his arm. You know you can, but it would be better for you to go home and work out your problems. Give him the benefit of the doubt. Are you sure this is what you want? He's having an affair. I found a hotel bill and a receipt for a $5,000 ring. He didn't give me any ring. Where'd he get that kind of money? I have no idea. But you're missing the point. It wasn't for me. He has to have a girlfriend. She swiped the tears from her face with an angry hand. Until now, Matt had thought his sister was overreacting. He didn't want to think about where Blake had gotten that kind of money. A rash of burglaries had occurred over the past 2 months, but no, this was Blake, his partner and friend. He'd never do anything like that. Maybe it's a surprise and he borrowed the money. I don't care about the money. Would you quit worrying about that? We're okay financially. Blake never lets a bill go. The receipt was for 2 months ago. If the ring were a surprise for me, he would have given it to me already. Want me to talk to him? What could Matt say? This mess wasn't his business, but he couldn't believe Blake would cheat on Gina. He loved her. Divorce isn't the answer, especially leaving him without giving him a chance to explain. The Bible says it's okay when it's infidelity, if that's what you're worried about. Just because it's okay doesn't mean you should do it. Annalise and I had some rough times, too, but we weathered them. I just keep thinking about what would have happened if I'd given up. We would have missed out on some important times together. We wouldn't have Caitlin, either. She gave a huge sigh. I should have known better than to ask you, Mr. Perfect, she muttered. She shoved Ajax's head off her lap and stood. It's hard not to give up. He's never home. Look, go home and at least talk to him. I'm sure there's an explanation. Give it a shot anyway. Her gaze came up, and tears sparkled in her eyes. Didn't you hear me, Matt? When am I supposed to talk to him? He's never home. She grabbed her purse with quick movements. I've got to go. She stopped by the door. Pray for me. I don't think I can get through this. She vanished through the door. The human spirit could take more than one ever thought it could, but Matt wished his baby sister didn't have to go through this. First thing in the morning, Hannah and Angie hit the road. 5 hours later, they were nearly to Park County. They had crossed the Illinois line into Indiana half an hour ago. Hannah's four cats prowled restlessly in their carriers in the back. Their yowls had grown more outraged in the past hour. The last time Hannah had come through here, she'd been peering out the back of Reese's truck as the world she knew fell away. Then the landscape was still in the grip of winter with an early spring beginning to poke through. Now spring blossoms dotted the green hillsides, and she caught glimpses of covered bridges down several narrow lanes. Home. The word evoked both dread and longing. She knew what would face her, and the thought was something she'd pushed down into the darkest recesses of her mind for 10 years. You okay? Angie asked from the driver's seat. Hannah slanted a smile her way. A little scared. I don't think I could have done this if you hadn't come with me. She looked back down at the quilt piece in her lap. Working on it kept her mind from peeking into corners she'd closed off for years. It's what friends do. Besides, we've got to get that book delivered. Angie's grin was cheeky. They won't eat you, will they? It might hurt less if they did. Her heart squeezed at the thought of the reception that awaited her. There would be no slow smile from Luca, and her friends might not talk to her. She missed Sarah. Hannah took a last sip of her iced vanilla coffee. "Which way?" Angie asked. "Let me check my GPS. Turn left here." Hannah gazed out the window. "This looks familiar." The woods crowded along the road, the sun disappearing 10 feet into the thick trees. She rolled down her window and breathed in the scent of forest and river. The fields had been freshly plowed, and soon corn would grow so close to the road it would be like traveling through a green cornstalk tunnel. But she'd be long gone by then. The thought hurt. "So what is this shunning thing? You're still family. How can they turn their backs on you?" The world never understood. Even though Hannah was about to put herself on the receiving end of a very painful circumstance, she didn't begrudge her people the right. "They want to make sure the corruption doesn't spread. If I hadn't joined the church, there would be no Maidong. But I knelt before the entire congregation and promised to be faithful to our way. I broke that oath when I ran off with Reese. And they love me. They don't want me to continue on the wrong path." "Have you been in touch with anyone since you left?" "Just my aunt. I tried to call my cousin at work the other day, but he wasn't in." "Why didn't your aunt follow the ban? She still corresponds with you." "She's a bit of a rebel," Hannah laughed, remembering her aunt's small rebellions. Curtains at the windows, a landscape picture or two in her bedroom, sending her son Mo to the public school. For some reason, the bishop had always allowed her the small indiscretions. Mam said he'd been sweet on Aunt Nora once upon a time. The car crested a hill, and in the valley ahead of them lay the old homestead. Hannah caught her breath, and her lungs constricted. The 10 years hadn't changed it. Luca had given the house a fresh coat of paint recently, and the white siding gleamed in the spring sunshine. The redbud trees along the pond bloomed with purple flowers. Mam's bed of jonquils had spread out to take over more of the side yard. Hannah could almost see her mother on the other side of the screen door, her white prayer cap bobbing and weaving as she kneaded bread. Laundry flapped in the breeze from a line stretched by pulley from the house to the top of the barn. Two buggies were parked under a big walnut tree. She could imagine it was yesterday she was here last instead of 10 years ago. "Who inherited the property?" "My cousin Luca and I. I'm not sure what he did about that. Likely just took over the farm and greenhouse and is waiting for me to show up someday." Hannah knew Luca would never take it to the law to try to gain anything. "Do you think he'll turn you away?" "I don't think so. He and his wife won't be able to dine with me, though. I'll have to eat alone." "If you haven't been in touch with him, how do you know he's married?" Hannah drank in more of the sights before answering. The garden had been turned over and planted, but nothing grew yet. The greenhouse billowed with colorful flowers and leafy plants. She could smell the aroma of phlox from here. Horses grazed in the pasture, and she strained to see if Lucy was still there. Her soul leaped when she saw the Appaloosa's familiar spots. She dragged her gaze from the familiar sights. The small clothes on the line. The Amish cherish children and welcome any that God sends them. We don't use birth control. If he's married, he has children. Hannah held the picture of the red-headed girl in her hand, and she studied it again. She longed to find the answer to this riddle today. Hannah had no idea whom Luca had married. He'd once had his eye on her best friend, Sarah. The thought of facing Sarah, as well as Luca, made a sheen of perspiration break out on her forehead. She opened her mouth to tell Angie to drive on past, but it was too late. Angie was already pulling into the driveway behind one of the open black buggies. "I thought buggies were enclosed," Angie said. "The ones I've seen in northern Indiana even have lights on them." "My ancestors are Swiss Amish," Hannah said, her gaze riveted on the screen door that offered a glimpse of movement. "Too much comfort is bad for the soul." She leaned out the window. "They refuse to use lights or warning signs until the state made them. They believe if they have an accident, it's God's will. It's all part of Gelassenheit." calmness in the storm of whatever God brings. "They're the kids," Angie said, gesturing toward a trampoline in the backyard. Two tow-headed children bounced on it, both girls, the strings on their bonnets flying in the breeze and their dark blue dresses fluttering around their calves. Hannah guessed their ages to be about 5 and 6. The screen door opened, and a young woman stepped out onto the side porch. Hannah would have recognized those blue eyes and pink cheeks anywhere. Sarah could have been a poster child for a healthy farm girl raised on fresh dairy and vegetables. She squinted at the car, then her gaze locked with Hannah's. Her mouth dropped open, then closed. Those perfect pink cheeks paled. Her hand left the screen door, and she took the first step down. "Hannah," she said in a faltering voice, "it's you, isn't it?" She moved quickly down the remaining 2 steps into the yard. Hannah put aside her quilt block, then thrust open the car door and got out. For the first time in years, she felt naked without her prayer bonnet, and the sleeves on her blouse were too short. Why hadn't she taken more care with her clothing this morning? Her attention had been on the child's picture, and she hadn't thought about what her family would say. At least she wore a broomstick skirt that came down to the bottom of her calves. "Hello, Sarah," Hannah said. She made an awkward move to embrace her friend, but Sarah stepped back with an alarmed expression and a quick glance at her children. "You are all right?" Sarah asked, her gaze going past Hannah to the car. "Where is your husband?" How did she explain it? Sarah would never understand. "We're separated," was all Hannah could manage. Sarah's already wide eyes did a slow blink, and her mouth twisted into a frown. Angie got out of the other side of the car, and Sarah glanced at her. A formal smile froze on her face. She wouldn't be rude to a guest, Hannah knew. It might have been smarter than she realized to bring Angie. "Sarah, this is my, good friend, Angie Wang." She nearly introduced Angie as her publicist. That wouldn't have gone over well. "Hello," Sarah said in a forced tone. "Could I, get you some tea or coffee?" The Amish prized hospitality. Since Angie wasn't under the Maidong, she was welcomed, though Hannah was a pariah. The thought hurt. "No, thank you. We stopped for coffee on the way," Angie said. "Your kids are cute." Sarah's distracted glance went to where the children still bounced on the trampoline. "Naomi and Sharon." She looked back at Hannah. "Why are you here after all this time?" Sarah wasn't going to make it easy. Hannah would give anything for things to be the way they were 10 years ago, before everything changed. "Is Luca home?" "No. He's on a trip to Indianapolis to sell some plants. He won't be back until next Monday night." Sarah bit her lip and looked as though she was about to cry. "You should go, Hannah, before the bishop knows you're here." "I need some answers first," Hannah said. She might as well make this quick. There was no welcome for her here. She reached into the car and grabbed the picture of the little girl off the seat. "I wonder if you know this little girl. Maybe you've seen her around the area. The picture was taken just down the road." Sarah frowned, but she took the picture and stared at it. "She has the look of my Hannah. She could almost be your daughter." She gave Hannah a quick glance. "Who is this child?" "I'm not sure." Hannah longed to pour out the story. Once upon a time, Sarah would have listened to every heartache, cried with Hannah over every painful moment. Now, they were like two strangers. Sarah handed back the picture. "I've never seen her." Hannah pressed for an answer she wanted to hear. "You've never seen her around? She's standing by the covered bridge down the road. She's a stranger. What is this about?" Before she could answer, the sound of an engine and tires on gravel made Hannah turn. The bubble lights atop a blue SUV made her stomach dip. A familiar set of wide shoulders exited the driver's side of the vehicle. She had no trouble putting a name to the tanned face under the hat. The firm lips and piercing blue eyes sometimes haunted her nightmares. Detective Matt Beitler. After living with Ree, she thought of him as Matt now, though her husband's former partner still terrified her. She forced herself to stand her ground when those eyes that noticed everything looked her way. If she hadn't been so frightened, she might have laughed at the way his nostrils flared like those of a dog at a fresh scent. His lids came down into a squint that told her he hadn't forgotten her any more than she had been able to rid herself of memories of him. His gaze pinned her in place. "Hannah Schwartz," he drawled the words. "Where's O'Connor? He took my favorite gun when he vanished." She remembered the gun. Reese probably still had it. "I have no idea," she said. "We've been separated for 5 years." He raised his eyebrows at that, then shrugged. Another deputy got out of the passenger side, and Hannah caught a glimpse of a dog in the back of the SUV. She struggled to remember the dog's name. Ajax. The other deputy was putting away his phone. He walked with a swagger that announced his importance. He probably was attracted to the ladies with his young Elvis look. Matt looked her over. "How long have you been back in town?" he asked. "About 10 minutes." "Where were you yesterday?" She put out her hands, palms up. "What? I'm under suspicion already." His gaze sharpened. "How did you know we have another murder?"
I didn't," she stammered.
"I mean, you were acting suspicious of me. Isn't there always some crime happening?"
"Not like this. And not in Park County. This is Indiana, not Chicago."
His gaze dismissed her and went to Sarah.
"Do you have a minute, Mrs. Schwartz?"
Sarah took a step back. "Luca isn't here right now. He's in Indianapolis. He won't be back for another week.
I need to talk to you,"
Matt said in a gentle voice. When a man as hard and focused as Matt Beitler sounded sympathetic, something bad had happened. Hannah and Sarah exchanged frightened glances, and Sarah edged closer to Hannah. Hannah slipped her arm around Sarah, and her friend didn't pull away this time.
"What's wrong, Matt?" Hannah asked.
She bit her lip when he frowned. Maybe he didn't like her using his first name. Some people could be touchy about that.
"Maybe we'd better go inside."
Hannah fought against the panic bubbling up.
"Is it Luca?"
She forced the words out past her tight throat.
"Please, God, not Luca."
Surprise flickered across his face.
"No, it's not Luca," he said.
Hannah and Sarah exhaled at the same time.
"Look, deputy, can't you see you're scaring the women half to death?" Angie put in. "Just tell them what's wrong."
Matt pressed his lips together and directed his gaze at Sarah.
"It's Luca's cousin, Mr. Honegger."
"Mo Honegger.
We found him in a meadow on the other side of the county yesterday."
Mo. Hannah could still imagine him yodeling as he milked the cows. She had been hopeful Mo, if no one else, would listen to her when she came home.
"Mo?"
A bead of perspiration dotted Sarah's upper lip. "He was supposed to go with Luca until he got sick."
"We know,"
Matt said with a gentleness that was out of keeping with his sharp glance around the yard.
"What's happened to Mo?"
Sarah whispered.
"He was poisoned."
Hannah would have fallen if she and Sarah hadn't been clinging to each other.
Poisoned, just like her family. How could it be coincidence, right when Reese had found her again?
8. Amish plain clothing promotes humility and separation. Hannah Schwartz on Good Morning America. A chain-link fence barred Reese from the playground. He snapped a few pictures when he thought no one was looking. The kid looked just like Hannah. He had been amazed and shocked the first time he saw her, and the plan had been born. Settling on the bench by the street, he pretended to read the newspaper until the bell rang at 2:30. Kids began to pour from the school, escorted by the teachers who saw them off. 5 minutes later, the kid said goodbye to her teacher and ran to a red neon. Gina got out and opened the back door for her.
The little girl climbed into the car, and the woman buckled her into the car seat. By the time they drove away, Reese had jumped into his car. He followed them through Rockville and out U.S. 36. His car weaved a bit as he jotted down the license plate number. He'd thought Gina would take the kid home like usual, but this wasn't the right direction. The car turned north by Billy Creek Village and continued on down a gravel road. He let his car fall farther behind. The plume of dust would tell him which way to go without his staying close enough to call suspicion on himself. The dust settled at a house and barn near Niceville. As he idled past, Gina and the kid walked to the front door and disappeared inside. There was surely a chink in the armor somewhere, something that would prove the kid needed rescuing. He pulled behind a tree and watched. A little while later, Gina came out carrying a suitcase. She and the kid got in the car and drove off. He fell a ways behind them and followed them to Matt's house. Was Gina moving in or something? That could complicate things, but not so much he couldn't handle it. He had to prove his love to his wife, show her how different things could be. He had made a mistake 5 years ago, but it wasn't too late to fix it. His grandmother had told him it was never too late to do the right thing. He could give Hannah the family she craved. Matt's knee ached from his old football injury as he walked slowly to his vehicle. Ajax trotted beside him and hopped into the back seat when he opened the door. The new case was going to ruin his day off. They had nothing. The guy had been poisoned with strychnine just like the victims a decade ago, but there were no prints, no clues, just a body in the woods. He had no idea what to do with himself tomorrow. Maybe taking Caitlin out to see his grandmother. It had been nearly a month since he'd gone by the old house. His mind would be too busy thinking about the new case to get anything productive done at home. He called his sister at his house. "Hey, I'm just getting off work. You get Caitlin all right?" "Of course. We're baking chocolate chip cookies. I stopped by home and got my stuff." "Does Blake know you're moving in with me for a while?"
"I told him this morning. He didn't even try to talk me out of it." She ended on a muffled sob.
"Did you ask him about the ring?"
"He said he'd bought it for me, then took it back after a fight."
"What a lame excuse. Do you believe him?"
"No. I'll move in with you for a while. Hey, Matt, there's something I noticed today. It might be nothing, but it left me uneasy."
"What's wrong?"
"There was a guy outside the school watching the kids. He was there on Monday, too, when I got Caitlin. You might ask Mrs. Downs if he was there when she got Caitlin on Tuesday."
"Maybe it's a parent."
But his gut tightened. "I've never gotten a close look at him. He wore Amish clothes with his hat pulled down low, so I couldn't see his face. Something about him seemed familiar. I think he followed us today."
"In a car?"
"An Amish man drove a car."
Matt quit searching for his keys in his pocket. "You're sure? Maybe it was a Mennonite."
"Well, he had a beard and hat like an Amish guy. I thought I saw him get into a tan truck. One followed us to my house and then on to here, too."
Matt didn't want to believe someone could be stalking his sister, but it was a possibility. Could it be someone masquerading as Amish? "Could Blake have asked someone to watch you?"
"Why?" Her voice dropped to a whisper. "I'm not the one cheating."
"Sorry, Gina. I wish I could fix it."
She said nothing for a long moment. "You helped, Matt. It helped to have someone to talk to."
"Listen, I need to get the cookies out of the oven. Don't forget to ask Mrs. Downs about that guy."
"I won't."
He clicked off the phone and rang the neighbor who watched his daughter 2 days a week. She hadn't noticed any man, she told him. Maybe the man's behavior was innocent, but Matt planned to talk to Caitlin's teacher about it. He remembered when he was growing up, how he played outside all day without Trudy knowing where he was. She didn't care, for that matter. 30 years ago, there was no need to fear the possibility of some sicko snatching a kid. Time pedaled back as Hannah clipped meadow tea leaves from the patch at the side of the yard. The cats prowled at her feet in the dark. She breathed in the cool spearmint fragrance. Nurturing came naturally to her, but there was so little she could do for her grieving aunt. "Don't go far.
she told her cats before opening the back door. They never wandered away from home. When she went inside, the kettle of water was boiling on the wood stove. She tossed the leaves into the water and turned off the flame, then covered the brewing tea. She could hear Aunt Nora weeping in the living room and the soft sounds of comfort Sarah made. It should have been her job, but Sarah thought Aunt Nora didn't need something else to upset her, and Hannah had agreed. Once the weeping stopped, she planned to bring in tea and reveal herself to her aunt. Angie was getting cream from the propane refrigerator. "This milk looks funny." She gave the pitcher a suspicious sniff. "It's raw, straight from the cow. The cream rises to the top. You just skim some off for the tea." Angie's brows raised, but she used a coffee cup to skim some liquid, then poured it into a creamer. Hannah turned from the stove to find two sets of big eyes on her. The oldest little girl, Naomi, was the first to speak, and the familiar German-Swiss dialect sounded strange. "Are you really our cousin?" Hannah nodded and smiled. She answered in German, but the words rolled awkwardly across her lips. "Ja? You are not in school yet?" Amish children spoke German until they went to school, where they learned English for the first time. "Next year," Naomi said, "I'm 6. Sharon is 5. Angie had that frozen smile on her face that people wear when they don't understand anything. Hannah held up a finger to signal she'd switch back to English in a minute. Naomi crept closer and put her hand in Hannah's. "Your hair is pretty. Mom says beauty doesn't matter, but I wish mine looked like yours." Hannah squeezed her cousin's hand, but didn't answer. She wished for a prayer bonnet to cover her bright hair. Her rich auburn locks had singled her out for attention from the English when she was growing up, and she didn't want to experience that again. The sobs were tapering off in the gathering room. Hannah transferred the tea to a teapot, then arranged it on a tray with cups, sugar, cream, and spoons. Just as she lifted the tray, she realized none of them would receive it from her. She'd forgotten in the grief of the moment. "Can you take this in?" she asked Angie. "I'll stay here with the children." "Why can I go but not you? They aren't allowed to accept a favor from someone under the ban." "I'd forgotten." Her eyes stung. She so badly wanted to help. Angie lifted the tray from her hands and disappeared through the door with it. There was still some tea in the pot. "Want some tea?" she asked the girls. They both nodded, so she spooned sugar into cups and added the pale yellow liquid of meadow tea. She sipped her own, and the spearmint flavor brought all the familiarity of home to her. The horses neighing outside, the homey welcome of the farmhouse kitchen, the fresh herbs growing on the windowsill. She'd missed it all, and only now did she realize just how much. The sound of a buggy crunching along the gravel outside caught her attention. She rose from the table and peered out the window. The sun caught the strong face under the wide brim of the black hat. Bishop Samuel Kirchhofer. The old quilt was getting threadbare. Matt tucked it around his daughter and kissed her sleeping cheek. He left the door partway open and went down the hall to join his sister in the living room. Ajax stayed behind to keep watch. He passed the computer room. The steady blue glow lit the dark office and beckoned to him. He sat in front of the monitor and clicked the Firefox icon, then typed in the URL of a forum where people searching for missing persons gathered. The ad he'd put on the bulletin board hadn't brought a response in the year it had been up. But every time he sat down here, he hoped and prayed for a lead. Anything. A figure blocked the light from the hall fixture behind him. Gina pulled up a chair. "Aren't you ever going to give up?" "No." He studied the screen displaying the old photo he'd uploaded. She was probably 26 in the picture. His 8-year-old self gazed up at her with naked love. 2 weeks later, she'd left him and Gina and never looked back. So why, then, did he think she'd come running just because he was looking? His sister sighed. "You can't find someone who doesn't want to be found." She clicked through a few of the links and read the posts. "Look at all these, Matt. Hundreds. And one in 1,000 finds a clue. Why bother? I'd just like some closure. That's my job." He attempted a laugh, but it came out flat. "I'd like to ask her why she left us. Why she never called or wrote. I've got a daughter myself now, and I'd never do that to Caitlin." Gina leaned back in the chair and shoved away from the computer. "Everyone isn't like you. Some mothers get tired of kids nagging them all day long. It happens every day. I pray to God every day that I never turn out like her." Matt turned his head and looked at her, but didn't say anything. It puzzled him that she didn't seem to care. Weren't girls supposed to be close to their mothers? She pushed her hair out of her face. "Don't look at me like I'm some kind of heartless witch. She left us, Matt, remember? Pretending not to care is the only way I can get through knowing we meant so little to her. Do you remember her?" He could still smell her perfume sometimes in the night. Hear her voice. It wasn't natural that he couldn't get over the abandonment. He wanted to forget, but the memories dogged him. "Not much. Aunt Irene was a good mom to me, in spite of her mental state at times. She loved me and made sure I didn't lack anything. You'd be happier if she'd kept you, too." Her gaze gentled. "I know it must have been hard staying with Trudy." His aunt hadn't wanted a rowdy boy. Neither had Trudy, for that matter, and neither had his mother. 9. The Irish chain quilt is a popular pattern in which the colorful blocks are all connected. In the same way, the Amish community is a long chain of fellowship and love. Hannah Schwartz, in The Amish Faith Through Their Quilts. The murmur of voices in the other room settled, and Hannah heard the soft clink of spoon against cup. Maybe the bishop would go to the front door and not enter through the kitchen. He didn't have to know she was here. While she'd always liked the man, she knew he would gently urge her to reconcile with God and come back to her Amish faith. She saw the wide brim of his hat pass the kitchen window and head to the front door. Her hand shook as she took a sip of her sweet tea. The confrontation would come sooner or later, and she'd put it off as long as possible. She set her tea on the table as Angie came back from listening at the doorway. "They're calmer now," she said. "Some guy showed up." "The bishop," Hannah murmured. Her hands itched to work on her quilt. The activity always soothed her. "He's the head of the church?" "This division, yes. Does my aunt know I'm here?" Angie shook her head. "Sarah didn't say a peep about it. I think she's waiting for a better time to mention it." "Did anyone see you?" "No." Angie glanced at the children. "Is the tea good?" They looked up at her with blank faces and went back to sipping their tea. "They only know German until they go to school," Hannah said. The cell phone inside Hannah's purse rang. She grabbed it before it could disturb anyone in the other room. The number flashed across the front, but she didn't recognize it. "Hello," she said. Reese's gravelly voice sounded in her ear. "Hang on," he said. "You can hear our little girl's voice." Seconds later, a child's voice called out, "You can't catch me!" Hannah's heart leaped at the childish voice. She gasped and pressed the phone tighter to her ear. The child laughed and chattered to someone, and the voice imprinted itself on her soul. Was this her child? Or a horrible joke? Reese's voice came back on the line. "Doesn't she sound sweet, Hannah?" "She misses you. I miss you. We can be a real family, hon. It's all up to you." She struggled to speak past the invisible band around her throat. "Leave me alone, Reese. You killed our baby." "She's not dead, Hannah. You just heard her voice. Come home and you'll see. I'll give her back to you. We can put the past behind us. Start fresh. Your running off nearly killed me. I need you. Your daughter needs you. I even converted to the Amish faith, too. We can be everything you always wanted." "You're lying." She shuddered with the desire to get in the car and drive to where he was to see if he really had the child, but it wasn't possible. Her daughter was dead. She still didn't know who the child was, but she knew Reese. He would never willingly care for a child.
Were you baptized?
Not yet, but soon. I'll send you a picture. I joined a community in Shipshawana.
You don't even know German.
It's all in who you know. Some teenagers were harassing the bishop's son, and I stopped to help. He's been tutoring me in German and helping me learn all the rules. This can work, Hannah. I'll even switch to your old district. Just come home.
Reese, the protector.
He was always rushing in to help and then expected eternal gratitude. She hardened her heart to resist the plea in his voice. He had to be lying. He'd sworn he'd never become Amish.
How'd you get this number?
She asked. I still have friends,
he said.
And he did. His background in law enforcement was one reason she'd resisted getting a phone for so long. Then, when the book hit big, she'd had no choice, but she had an unlisted number. That hadn't slowed him down long. Saying nothing at all, she quietly closed her cell phone, then pressed the button to shut it off. Aware that Angie and the children were staring at her, she managed a smile. Anyone want a cookie? Her aunt always kept cookies in the jar on the top of the refrigerator. She didn't wait for an answer, since the girls wouldn't have understood, but reached up and pulled down the jar. The girls each accepted a cookie, and Hannah turned to pour them some milk. Once she set the glasses on the table, she moved to the sink to stare out the window. Angie's vanilla scent told her that her friend had moved closer.
"What's that, Reese?" she asked.
"Yes.
He says he has our daughter, that he's raising her Amish in a district in Shipshawana."
"But she wasn't dressed Amish."
"I know."
Hannah glanced into Angie's worried face. "He taped a little girl laughing and talking. He said it was our daughter. I think he's toying with me, but I can't get it out of my head, Angie. What if he's not lying? What if this little girl really is my baby?
Maybe he converted after the picture."
Hannah couldn't let it go. Everything in her longed to hold that little girl, to smell her hair, to hug her close and kiss that soft round cheek. Maybe she was losing her mind. Life with Reese might have driven her over the edge. Angie sighed.
"Find her, then. I bet she's here somewhere. Reese doesn't have her. He probably saw this girl and realized she looked a lot like you. He's playing games, trying to get you back. He couldn't have had her all this time. You said he wanted nothing to do with fatherhood."
"I know. He told me to come home if I wanted to see her." Hannah inhaled as a thought struck her.
"You don't think he's already taken her from her home, do you? What if he kidnapped her? I can't let her fall into his hands."
Angie grabbed her forearm.
"Think, Hannah. He's not going to risk jail. He's just trying to lure you home."
Hannah's panic calmed as she recalled that the girl's voice had mingled with other children's.
"You're right. I know you're right."
Shuddering, she leaned against the counter.
"I thought this was all behind me."
"It will be, if you let it." Hannah glanced at her then.
"Could you just walk away, Angie? Look that little girl in the face and walk away without knowing?"
Her friend hesitated, then sighed.
"Probably not, but there's no way I'd go back to the guy who beat me. I'm not going to."
But would she? If Reese had her daughter, she would have no choice but to go back long enough to grab the little girl and flee.
"Maybe I'll go talk to the sheriff. He might know something about the child."
A woman's voice Hannah recognized as her aunt's, raised in a sharp protest, though she couldn't make out any words. Angie exchanged a long glance with her.
"I wonder if Sarah told her I'm here," Hannah said.
Footsteps sounded on the wooden floor, then her aunt burst through the doorway, followed by Sarah. Tears marked Aunt Nora's eyes with puffiness, and she swiped a hand at her wet cheeks, but only succeeded in smearing dirt on them. Her bonnet was askew, but her dark blue dress and white apron were neat and pressed. She had to be 50 now, but she looked older. Hannah took a step toward her, arms open. Aunt Nora rushed into them. She hugged Hannah with a desperate grip, and a keening cry burst from her lips.
"I know," Hannah whispered, rocking the older woman a little. "I know."
Tears rolled down her cheeks, too. How well she remembered the grief, anguish, and disbelief. The emotions had never left her. The horror of that night colored everything she'd done since. Every time she thought of the monster who had destroyed her baby, her anger and hatred grew. If she was right, and it was Reese who had killed her parents too, she'd spit in his face, rake at his eyes with her nails. No punishment would be great enough for all he'd done. Every time she thought of her hate, the insistent voice of conviction came. Forgive. A voice she'd gotten good at ignoring. She knew her hate hollowed out her insides and drove nails into her compassion. She should pull it out by its roots, but the thought of justice was the only thing that kept the tears at bay. If she suffered for it in the end, then so be it. If that man was Reese, he'd killed her parents to get to her, and his plan had worked. Was it her bitterness that made her want to believe he was guilty, or could she be on the heels of truth? What if he'd struck again, killing Mo this time? A tremor ran through her, and she tightened her hold on Aunt Nora until the older woman managed to choke back her sobs. Her aunt pulled away and dabbed at her face. "Thank you for coming, Hannah. I know it wasn't easy for you." She straightened her shoulders. "I know my Mo is in God's hands. I must accept God's will. I shouldn't have meddled." Fresh moisture flooded her eyes. "Meddled? I was warned to stay quiet, stay out of it, but I saw the child." She bit her lip. "I knew then the sins of the past would come out."
"You saw my child?"
Hannah tried to keep her emotions in check. This was no time to push her aunt.
"Later,"
Aunt Nora whispered.
"Oh, why didn't I listen?"
She wiped her cheeks with her apron. Rebellion stirred in Hannah's heart. Why had God allowed this? He could have kept Mo and her own family safe, but he didn't. If this was his will, it wasn't fair. She didn't understand how her cousin, and now her aunt, had been able to just shrug and accept it. She was never going to forgive the man who had done this. Who had warned her aunt to stay quiet? And about what? It seemed impossible that Aunt Nora knew something. But maybe Hannah's mother had confided something in her sister-in-law. Mom had no close family of her own, and Dad's family had taken her under their wing. Nora tugged on Hannah's hand.
"Come, say hello to Bishop Kirchhofer."
Hannah hung back. I don't think I'm ready." She knew what was waiting for her, and the thought of a lecture at a terrible time like this made her want to run. But her aunt pulled harder and led Hannah to the living room. More than 10 years had slipped away since she'd been in this room she used to love. She and her mother had come over every week for tea and quilting, fellowship and belonging. The same hand-crocheted runners topped the end tables. The overstuffed sofa was looking a little threadbare. Everything was spotless, just like always. The last time Hannah had been here, her mother and father were still alive. Her mother sat in the rocker by the window so she could see to stitch the quilt block she worked on. The light gilded her blonde hair and made her look angelic. It had been 2 days before she went to join the heavenly choir. Hannah tore her gaze from the scarred wooden rocker to face the bishop. The last time she'd seen him, he'd ordered her to repent of her unforgiveness toward Cyrus Long. He was looking at her again with the same loving sternness. Her entire life had trained her to submit to authority, and the need to do it was like an itch she couldn't reach. Her knees weakened with a desire to fall to them and confess her sins. She reminded herself it was a trained response. He didn't know any longer. She was a different person from the pliable, easily deceived girl who had left here at 22.
"Hannah, you're well?"
he asked in his deep voice. When Hannah was a child, the tones and cadence of his voice always made her think she was hearing God's voice. The bishop had always looked as old as the limestone along the creek, and his flowing white beard and weathered face under the broad brim of the hat brought to mind Old Testament prophets.
"Yes," she said, "we've missed you. Your family needs you."
She stepped back a pace. "Please, now isn't the time to bring pressure. We need to help Aunt Nora get through this."
"It's never the wrong time to do right,"
he said in a gentle voice. Hannah didn't answer. She turned to her aunt. "Have you heard any more from the sheriff's office?"
"They've managed to get the autopsy scheduled for tomorrow, even though it usually takes much longer. Matt is a sweet boy who seems to care."
Aunt Nora wiped her eyes again. "The Lord's will be done."
"Indeed," the bishop said.
He turned his gaze on Hannah again, and an uncomfortable silence followed.
"I guess we'd better go," Hannah said. She couldn't stand much more silent pressure from him.
Sarah had been standing silently by the table with her children. "Do you have a place to stay?" she asked. "Or are you going back home?"
"I'll find a motel room somewhere," Hannah said.
"You'll stay here," her aunt said. "You understand I can't eat with you or accept any favors from you, but I won't turn you out on the street."
"I know the requirements," Hannah said.
"Thank you. I'll bring in our suitcases." With Angie in tow, she fled the presence of the bishop and Sarah.
"What was that all about?" Angie asked. "Gosh, the tension just vibrated in the air. Did he expect you to say you wanted to come back to the Amish faith?"
"That's exactly what he wants. And it's even tempting," Hannah said. "It will be hard to be here as an outcast."
"Could you ever go back and give up your life?"
Angie shuddered, as if it was the worst thing she'd ever heard.
"Family is important," Hannah said. "We try to preserve that as much as possible and lock out the world. When I didn't have the conveniences, I didn't miss them. Even now, there's not that much to miss. I don't watch much TV, and we always had gas lights and propane-powered appliances."
"So why not go back?"
Angie smiled. "You said, we, like you are still Amish."
"It's too late. Divorce is never accepted, not for any reason. But I'll always be Amish at heart. Even if I reconciled with Reese, I'd have to forgive the murderer, too, and I'll never do that. Never."
She thought about her aunt's words. Who could have warned her? And about what?
Thursday morning, 2 days after the murder, and he was already getting an autopsy. It paid to have friends in the right places. The cold in the coroner's lab penetrated Matt's bones. The rank smell nearly made him gag, but he stood his ground near the door. Ajax whined and pawed at his nose. Matt rubbed his dog's ears. "It's okay." Whit Grout had done him a favor and pushed the autopsy to the top of his list, so Matt decided to meet him here in the basement of the hospital, though it was never a pleasant experience. The coroner came through the door, peeling off his rubber gloves. Matt didn't want to speculate what the stains were on the man's lab coat. Whit shucked it, too, revealing khaki shorts and a T-shirt that read, "Greenhouse gas coming through. Hold your nose." About 40, he was so thin, the only thing that cast a shadow was his blonde hair, bushy as a porcupine. In spite of Whit's appearance, Matt had never met a smarter person. Whit noticed things. Important things. Matt and Ajax fell into step beside him as they went to Whit's office.
"What'd you find out?"
Whit didn't answer, plowing on ahead through the door and straight to the coffee pot. It smelled burned and stale, but he smacked his lips as he gulped half a cup.
"Ah, that hits the spot. Want some?"
"No, thanks. You figure out what killed Mo? Was it strychnine?"
"He had enough poison in his system to kill 10 people his size."
Whit dropped into his chair, a wooden piano stool that let him twist in any direction. Matt took the more comfortable wooden folding chair, and Ajax curled up at his feet.
The coroner had a big enough budget to get some decent furniture, but seemed to relish putting guests at a disadvantage. When he came in here, Matt felt like a bug under the microscope, and he suspected Whit